In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Yeah.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Indeed, it is time to talk movies. Pass the Popcorn, brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10 at 557 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor, where they have a film for everybody in the family. Alan Adams with us from The Main Edge, hanging around with us. Thank you for the lovely gifts that you brought in from your brother-in-law. These are cool.
Oh, aren't they neat? Yeah, like... No, he showed up with a handful at the holiday and wanted to make sure that you guys got your hands on some. So
very nice.
They are pens in the shape of drumsticks from Princess Leia's Stolen Death Star Plans Palette Swap Ninja. Love it.
Yeah,
these are great.
Yeah, no, they're pretty great.
Nice. I will be. Now, when you hear the annoying tap 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 in the background when I'm talking to somebody, you'll know why.
That's right.
How was your weekend?
It was good. It was good. I'm actually coming off the first real vacation I've had in, God, I don't even know how long.
That's right. Good for you.
Yeah. Didn't really go anywhere. Didn't really do anything. And it was awesome. Yeah.
We had a lovely time at your home on New Year's Day, which is always one of the absolute highlights of the year.
Yeah, no, it was another good one. We had a lot of fun. A lot of folks showed up, lots of food, lots of friends, et cetera, et cetera.
Did you have a favorite dish that day?
Well, you know, it's funny. One of the joys of it is that Sheridan is so willing to experiment a little bit. Like, there are some favorites that always make an appearance, but she tried some new things. The cinnamon roll casserole was lovely.
Yes, thank you. Number one on my list.
Yep, and she did like a sausage, cheesy sausage business that was really quite lovely.
Very good too.
And then, you know, the standbys, the French toast casserole, although she did do one with a big French toast with blueberries this year, which she had done before. And we some barbecue chicken, kielbasa, sauerkraut, you know, meatballs, the whole shebang.
See what you missed by being sick, Carrie?
I know. I'm cursing my decision to not spread my cold germs to everybody at Alan's house.
Yes, we appreciate you not being patient zero, so thank you. Thank you for that.
But in retrospect, it might have been worth it.
I think there might have been enough alcohol there to ward off any potential germs, but it was great, as always. So you got to see three movies this weekend.
I did. I got to see a couple of movies that have gotten a little bit of pull, a little bit of traction this awards season, and I got to see the one new wide release for the dumping ground that is the first the first couple of weeks of January. Which would you like to hear about first?
I vote dumping ground.
I went to see a movie called Escape Room, there's not a ton to say about it. The reality is that there are always going to be movies that, for whatever reason, don't turn out the way that studios had hoped. But you know, you make these movies; they're made, they're in the can. You've already coughed up the cash to make them happen. You need to, like, you can't just walk away from them. Like, they have to make their way out into the world somehow. And that's what January is for. That's where a lot of these movies, sort of get quietly dropped onto the slate. So they can kind of be quietly ignored in the wake of all the leftover Christmas time blockbusters and the upcoming wider releases of a lot of the prestige pictures that basically get their limited release in late December to be eligible for the awards and then gradually roll out as nominations come in. Escape Room, for one of these dumping ground movies, could have been worse. It's all right. I mean, all right's probably strong, but yeah, it's exactly what you think it is. It's a group of completely unconnected people who receive mysterious puzzle box invitations to participate in this escape room from this company called Minos Escape Rooms, and there's six of them, and they show up at the waiting room, and wouldn't you know it, the escaping starts right away. And then they're basically left sort of crawling through an increasingly logistical, nonsensical series of different rooms. Like, the way it's put together doesn't make any sense. Like, there's some serious warping of space-time to make any of this make any sort of sense in terms of just in terms of spatial relations, but whatever. Like, you, it's not the sort of movie where it's like, you know, it's not like they built a blueprint. Like, it was just like, yeah, let's, yeah, okay, this one room's an oven. Okay, now it's an old timey cabin, upside down pool hall. Like, it's a bunch of weird stuff. The production values are actually pretty good, all things considered. Like, the actual rooms themselves are sort of engaging in a weird sort of goofy way. The performances don't matter. Like, it doesn't matter who these people are. They all get like one or two basic characteristics, and then they're just sort of set loose to sort of team up and try to defeat the escape rooms. But there can only be one, apparently. And so, they start falling by the wayside pretty quick. I'm not going to tell you the order, although, like, honestly, you don't, nobody really cares. Yes, and it all boils down to whether or not any of these people will be able to escape. Because it turns out they have something in common after all. It's fine. Like, it's basically like, if you're in the mood for a Saw movie, but, you know, you don't really have the stomach for it, like, that's what this is. It's like a PG-13 Saw movie with less blood and a good deal less, like, moral proselytizing by a puppet. Like, but the basic gist is there. So, yeah, if you like that sort of thing, if you want your torture porn with less torture, then by all means, go out and see Escape Room.
A ringing endorsement. I'm surprised they didn't put that blurb on the poster. That sounds great. That's number one. What else did you see, Al?
Well, I went to see Mary, Queen of Scots.
Oh, yeah.
Which I was looking forward to. Turns out there's some weirdness with regards to the making of this movie, the production team behind it. Because the director is a woman, I believe her name's Julia Rourke, and this is her very first feature film directorial gig, but she's an artistic director at the Wareham Theatre in London, and like one of the preeminent like stage directors in London right now. And so that's where her experience comes from. It's from directing for the stage. And so it's an interesting choice. And one that I think works only because, like, the story of Mary, Queen of Scots is so sort of sweeping and epic in that very dramatic kind of way that I think that sensibility worked. You had two fantastic actresses playing the leads. Saoirse Ronan as the titular Mary, Queen of Scots, Mary Stuart. And then Margot Robbie played Queen Elizabeth I. And she's another one who... Again, I feel like she's constantly going to be underestimated because, frankly, because of the way she looks in terms of her actual performative talent. But she's an incredibly talented actress, and she gets to show that a little bit in this movie. The problem is the script, and it's not because there's no issue with veracity or anything like that. It seems like it's fairly historically accurate, but it just feels very strung together in a dry, almost history book kind of way, and it sort of saps a little bit of the drama out of the proceedings. And I'm not necessarily telling you that you need to, you know, insert like explosions and zombies and whatnot to make it interesting. I mean, not saying it wouldn't make it interesting, but you know, it's you need to give it a little bit of life, and that it's a little lackluster because of that. I'm not going to go in through the whole history of Mary Stuart and her claim to the throne because it's incredibly complicated and I'm not a historian. But the basic gist is Mary Stuart she's married off to the King of France, becomes Queen of France at 16, widowed at 18, returns to Scotland to claim her rightful place on the throne there, and begins requesting to be named the rightful successor to the British throne. But her cousin, Queen Elizabeth, isn't necessarily super jazzed about that idea. And so what follows is a sort of strange power struggle that is, simultaneously really brutal and also incredibly genteel. They do battle, but they do it in court, and they do it out in the fields, and they do it in the bedroom. Like, I mean, it's just like, there's so much sort of palace intrigue just baked into the entire situation. that I think a lot of the nuance just kind of got lost as far as the storytelling was concerned, because just there was so much stuff that they were trying to get in there. You just kind of lost the thread a couple of times, I think. That being said, it's a great looking movie. The lead performances are absolutely phenomenal. Ronan and Robbie are both really playing at the peak of their powers for this. And it's really neat because they kind of exist almost wholly separately in this movie. Like they only come together once during the entire film. Hmm. And so each one is sort of carrying their own aspect of the movie, and both prove more than capable of shouldering the load. You just wish that the script was a little tighter. I understand the desire to include as much as possible, but when you have something like this, it starts to feel a little bit overstuffed. And you know, if you could have sacrificed, you know, maybe one or two subplots and you know, lose 15 or 20 minutes of the movie, you get something that's a little tighter, a little easier to follow. And a little easier to engage with. I think that was part of the problem, because it was easy to sort of drift away and disconnect a little bit, just because it was there was so much happening that you didn't have time to, you know, connect in any sort of empathetic fashion.
All right. And what was the third film you saw?
I went to see The Favorite, which was it was screening down at Railroad Square in Waterville, and as I was on vacation, I was free to go down during the week. Sheridan and I actually went the day after New Year's. She took the day off work, and we decided we were going to go down and check it out. It's the story of two women competing for the attentions and affections of Queen Anne in the 18th century. And it's directed by Yorgos Lanthimos. He did The Lobster, Killing of a Sacred Deer. Like, he's probably the weirdest sort of auteur filmmaker of his, like, currently, like, out there. Like, he's a strange cat who makes a lot of strange choices, not least of which doing a sort of historical drama about the court of Queen Anne. But there you go. It stars Olivia Colman, who just won the Golden Globe for Best Actress, deservedly so, and Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz. It's rare to see, and for me, it was a particular pleasure, because it's like, you know, you don't necessarily get to see so many movies with such high quality roles for women, and to have that all happen sort of so close together was really great. Rachel Weisz plays Lady Sarah, who is the sort of closest advisor to Queen Anne, who is largely bedridden with gout and basically not interested in the affairs of state, preferring to care for her pet bunnies and watch duck races and all the other weird stuff that nobles are into.
It's like Carrie.
Yeah, no, that's how I imagine Carrie's life is. So Lady Sarah sort of runs things. But when Lady Sarah's cousin Abigail, played by Emma Stone, shows up, her family has been disgraced. They've lost everything in a fire. She's just seeking her cousin's help. So Lady Sarah gets her a job as a scullery maid, but circumstances lead to her becoming Lady Sarah's very own lady-in-waiting, and Abigail wanting to regain her place in the nobility and not lacking for ambition, starts to ingratiate herself with the queen. And so that sort of rivalry between the two starts to develop, and it develops in that sort of wonderfully low-key, sort of passive-aggressive kind of way, interspersed with some moments of really stunning, like, brutality. And so you have all this stuff kind of coming together. You know, there's the folks in Parliament who they're at war with France and they want to, you know, raise forces. But then you've got the landowners, led by a gentleman by the name of Harley, played by Nicholas Hoult, who wants to stop taxing the landowners and sue for peace. And, all of this intrigue is coming together. Meanwhile, Lady Sarah and Abigail are at each other's throats. There's a weird psychosexual dynamic to the whole triangle that is remarkable to see. I wasn't expecting the movie to be as funny as it is. Like, it's
interesting.
It's billed as a comedy. And I'm like, this isn't it. Like, how is this a comedy? It is. I mean, it's a dark comedy. And it's an incredibly strange comedy. But the thing about Lanthimos that's so great is he's willing to really push the boundaries as far as what he's going to do in service to the story. And so you get a lot of deliberate anachronisms in terms of language and appearance, stuff like that. He takes full advantage of a bunch of camera tricks, like his use of fisheye lenses in a number of shots especially is really striking. And it's just weird and interesting and almost certainly completely inaccurate, but in a fun way. And again, the performances, Coleman won, well-deserved, and Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz are both phenomenal. They're going to get nominated for all manner of stuff. And yeah, and it's one of the joys of it is it's yet another example of the sort of twin movie phenomenon, because it's like, oh yeah, no, we've got two prestige pictures about you know, British royalty and the issues that come with the idea of you know, of power, of powerful women dealing with the people around them. It's one of those things, you know. I mean, it's no Deep Impact Armageddon, but it's, I mean, you don't usually get this sort of twinning with prestige pictures, but there you have it. And again, they're both very good. I think Mary Queen of Scots suffers from its proximity to The Favourite, because I believe that's the superior movie on a pretty much every level. That's not to say Mary Queen of Scots is a bad movie, but The Favourite is really excellent. It's so excellent that I kind of figured it was going to win its category in the Golden Globes last night.
Well, yeah, let's talk about that. Golden Globes were awarded last night, and a lot of surprises.
I did my usual thing. I predicted some outcomes. I got crushed on the television side. Like, I don't have any idea what's going on over there. I know that, I have no doubt that every winner was a deserving one, but I was really surprised by a number of the picks on the TV side. But in terms of the movies, Mahershala Ali, like, he was excellent. He deserved that win for sure. But Olivia Colman was wonderful. I was shocked in the drama category. I really thought Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga were both going to win, and neither one did. A Star Is Born got shut down to an extent that I think shocked a lot of people. I think a lot of people were expecting that movie, this to sort of be the precursor to A Star Is Born's sort of march to the sea as far as picking up a bunch of Oscar wins. And now it's tough to tell. Like, it's a little bit up in the air. I thought Rami Malek was great. I think he's certainly deserving to be in that conversation. I think he warrants the award that he won. Ditto Glenn Close. I was stunned at the Bohemian Rhapsody win as a movie. Like, and I this is just someone who liked that movie, but like, the idea that it's better than some of the other ones in that category, like, I find that very, very tough to swallow. Same thing on the other side with Green Book. Like, I liked Green Book, and I thought the performances were great, but there are some pretty glaring weaknesses in that film that I think some of the other nominees just don't have. The Favourite, I think, is far and away a superior movie to that. But again, I am not a member of the Hollywood Foreign Press, and so I don't really have any say in the matter.
Not yet.
Well, sure. But it was a lot. I mean, it was fun. I thought Andy Samberg and Sandra Oh did as well as you're going to be able to do, considering all things considered. Like, hosting award shows has become a pretty thankless slog of a gig, and they did their best to make it fun.
Hard to argue with the Lifetime Achievement winners too.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, like, I actually thought of you when they brought out Carol Burnett. Like, that seemed like something that would really resonate with you. My wife was the same way. Like, she spent a lot of time watching the Carol Burnett show when she was a kid. And I said it on social media. I love me some Jeff Bridges.
Oh God, yes.
Especially when he gets all weird and rambly. Like, it's just like, yes, give it to me. Like, just pump it into my veins. Yes, Little Rudders on Big Rudders and Buckminster Fuller. And I mean, come on. He's, the older he gets, the more it's like, oh wait, so you really are you really are Jeffrey Lebowski, aren't you?
I read, maybe you saw it. It got a lot of play on social media over the weekend. I think is it Rod Lurie who directed a great movie with Jeff Bridges and Joan Allen about 20 years ago, The Contender.
Oh, right, The Contender.
And he told the story of going to talk with Jeff Bridges at his house about The Contender. And he shows up, and it's 10 o'clock in the morning, and Bridges is in the robe.
Of course he is.
The Lebowski robe, and explained that, yeah, that wasn't a costume. That's my robe. And he says to him at 10 a.m., you want anything to drink? And Lurie says, like, what? He goes, I don't know. Bloody Mary? And so Lurie says, how about White Russians? He doesn't drink. Bridges comes out with half a dozen White Russians and proceeds to drink all six of them during their two-hour conversation about the movie. Yeah. Josh Gondelman had a great tweet earlier today. He wrote, do you think Jeff Bridges is in all these Westerns? Oh, shoot, I lost my page. Do you think Jeff Bridges is in all those Westerns because he's always out in the desert smoking weed and shooting guns and stuff, and it's easier to cast him than to film around him?
Oh, yeah. No, he just stumbles onto movie sets. Yes, that seems like I would bet good money that at least one of the entries on Jeff Bridges' lengthy filmography took place because he just wandered in front of a camera, and they're just like, you know what? Welcome aboard, Jeff.
Yeah. Good stuff. Alan Adams, thank you, sir.
My pleasure.
We'll see you on Wednesday.
Yes, sir.